With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome along to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Rory Barlow. I'm joined by Roman de Arquer. It's been a controversial week in Spain. How are you doing, Roman?
I'm doing good. It's been very, very controversial, of course, with all the racism going on in the Vinicius situation. Hasn't been ideal. It's not what we would be wanting to talk about, but unfortunately that's what's taken up all of the covers lately of newspapers and online.
Pretty much, and we're going to come on to that. We will address kind of the reaction and the fallout to it, but we're going to do it at the end of the programme. Today we'll kind of finish on that, but we're going to focus on the football for the first kind of section of the podcast. We will do kind of sort of more of the European race in that second half of the show, but for me, there's only one real place to start, and it's not with Barcelona, although it is Barcelona involved, and that is Real Valladolid, who came up with a massive, huge, humongous 3-1 win over Barcelona at home on Tuesday night. And we know Barcelona look as if they are already thinking about where they're going on holiday, but even so, La Pucela put in a really good performance, didn't they?
Yeah, deserved win. I mean, I've been hearing talks about Barca letting Valladolid win to allow Espanyol to go down, you know, that kind of stuff. And honestly, I think it's absolute nonsense. Valladolid won because they were the better side. They were more accurate towards goal. They had they made the most of their chances. Basically, it was unfortunate, for example, in the second minute, that Christensen had to concede an own goal. But you know, that's football. And from there on, you know, Valladolid overall were very good. They knew that they were fighting for their lives there. They gave their 100%, and in the end, they got a good result. And as you said, Barca probably thinking more about their holidays. They've done their work, I guess, winning La Liga. I thought maybe they would be slightly motivated to keep working on those records in terms of goals conceded and clean sheets and all that. But apparently, Xavi hasn't found the right attitude from the players to actually fight for those records. And on the other hand, of course, there's that fight for Lewandowski to get the Pichichi, which of course he did get his goal later on in the game, and is still an advantage for that. But we'll see what happens in the next couple of games, because it clearly seems like Barca doesn't have the same mentality, obviously, that they had before winning the title.
Yes, obviously, Barcelona. In the meantime, Jordi Alba has announced his departure from Barcelona. He'll be leaving this summer, as well as Sergi Busquets. The two of them will have an homage to the both of them at Camp Nou on Sunday when they take on Real Mallorca. Your quick thoughts on Jordi Alba? I'm sure we'll kind of talk about kind of the moving of the cycle at the end of the season, but yeah, Jordi Alba, he was a brilliant left back for Barcelona over the last 11 years, it should be said.
Yeah, I mean, definitely he's in the discussion of who's the best left back ever. I think at Barca he's definitely up there. He's been a phenomenal player, especially as an attacking player. You know, he's provided so many innumerable incredible assists to Messi and to other players. He was really a dagger down that left wing. Defensively, he's had his ups and downs, but you know, he's been a great player for us. And I think he leaves in a good manner, in the sense that he was not a starting player. He accepted secondary role without really complaining much, and when he came on, he did well. He did a good job this season. You know, he was also part of the team that won La Liga title. So, I mean, I'm glad that he's finally decided to move on and not waited until there was too much pressure on him to leave or too much criticism. You know, and I think it's just the right time. He could have stayed on, I guess, another season as a left back sub, you know, because he's always a useful player. But I guess in terms of salary, this really helps Barca to be able of signing other players, I guess, in the future and fixing their salary cap situation.
Yeah, it's quite a noble act. I mean, it's been said that he'll leave kind of somewhere between kind of 30 and 50% of the money that he was due in this last year over for Barcelona. And as much as he's an acquired taste on the pitch, I think the way that a lot of people have been speaking about him and the way that he's acted this year, as you say, shows that off the pitch, perhaps he isn't quite as spiky a character as some may see him. But just coming back onto Valladolid, because obviously this was a brilliant win for them, I think it keeps them essentially in the relegation battle. If they had lost this game, they would have been on the same points as Espanyol. They would have been 3 points back from Getafe and Cadiz in 16th and 17th. Paulo Pezzolano has been up and down since he's taken over this Valladolid job, but you saw them have a real bite and an aggression in this game, and they took the chances. And in particular, Kyle Larin was very, very good, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Larin has definitely been one of the star signings in the winter transfer window four by the Lida. Right in the first game, he already made an impact, scored a goal. And he's been one of the few players in attack, we could say, that's been actually pulling the team forward and giving them hopes of staying alive in the first division. It's true that their latest streak hasn't been good with Valladolid. Pezzolano has also been struggling. I mean, it's not easy to come midway through a season, you know, and try and solve things. But in the end, what's important is that they save themselves. So, I mean, there's still two games left to go. It's all still very, very open. Anything can happen. And if they keep having Larin at this level scoring goals, I mean, they'll have a better shot. Because if there's one thing we've seen with Pezzolano is that the team is better offensively. Defensively, I think they've maybe not really been too reliable, I guess, but I don't see them very confident in the back, and they do concede quite a lot. But at least in attack, he's managed to get his players to get goals, so that's what's important. And at the end of the day, they need those next 3 points and see what happens, because it's going to be a nice little battle down there.
Yeah, it certainly will. They face Almeria away next at the weekend, and then they will finish at home to Getafe in what looks like it might be a straight shootout for survival. Coming on to Espanyol, who probably won't survive, they managed a remarkable 3-3 draw against Atleti. They were 3-0 down at one point. They had played well for stretches of the first half, but looked as if they were going to be kind of dismissed, essentially, by Cholo Simeone's side. And in the space of 15 minutes, they managed to turn it around. Vinny Sosa got a header. Osalu scored as well. This was a massive point in some ways, but it almost feels as if it was not quite enough. They had kind of 10-15 minutes to get the winner, didn't quite manage it, and now they are 3 points behind with two games to go.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be enough. For 1 point, it's very unfortunate. Actually, Joselu had a really good one-on-one to get a 4-3 right at the end. It felt like that goal could have really changed things. I mean, Espanyol did fight, because with 3-0 down, you kind of feel like the game is completely over, but they never really gave up, and they kept pushing. And also has to be said, they were very, very unlucky with that Griezmann goal, which apparently has been proved that it wasn't a goal. I mean, I'm quite surprised that VAR would change a decision from the referee not to give the goal after the images they had, which weren't really accurate. You know, you could see the ball, but from a very strange angle. You know that those angles aren't reliable. So I'm quite shocked at how VAR once again has worked, and this is really something La Liga and the Federation have to look into, because I mean, these are massive mistakes, and this could mean that Espanyol now goes to Segunda, you know, because if it had been 3-2 in the end, it would have been 3 points for them. So I mean, very unlucky for Espanyol. They're going really through some tough times. They still got a bit of hope there, a couple of games, you know, anything could happen. Valladolid and Cadiz could lose their next two games and they could win everything, so we'll see what happens. But definitely they're in a super complex situation, and we'll have to see how this pans out for them.
Yeah, there's no real reason La Liga doesn't have goal line technology, unless they want to come out and explain that they should have it, and that would have solved this in seconds. Not quite sure why it's not been implemented in terms of Espanyol. Yeah, I'm still not convinced Luis García was the right choice to come in, but they have shown a bit of grit and a bit of spirit. In particular, Sergi Darder seems like he is dragging this team forward, whether they want to be or not, kicking and screaming, some might say. But it's very much 6 points and hope that other teams around them do them a few favours. I think for Espanyol, they're on 35, so they need to hope that none of the other teams around them get 4 points. Otherwise, they will be relegated. Coming on to one of their rivals, Getafe they dropped points against Elche at the weekend, and we thought that might come back to haunt them, but perhaps they repaired matters a little bit with a 1-0 win away to Real Betis. This is massive for the relegation battle as well. I think Getafe, Enes Unal went down injured in the first half, hobbled off. It looks as if he might not be back for the rest of the season. And bearing in mind that basically nobody else at Getafe can score goals, it's quite a big blow, but Alderete comes up with a header, and you saw the celebrations at the end, huddled up. It was very much us against the world, and La Bordaleta is chugged into life.
Yeah, and mentioning the injury, it's true that Enes Unal is definitely their main source of goals, but with Bordalas, I guess he's a bit less necessary because he only needs one goal a game, really, to get 3 points. So, anyone who's lucky enough to be in the box at the right place at the right time, I think, could do the job. But, yeah, of course, definitely, they would love to have Enes Unal available if possible. And, yeah, I felt like Bordalas was taking a bit too long to get one of his classic 1-0 results or a reaction at this stage of the season, because it felt like maybe, as you said, after the last game, before the one against Betis, they might be over for them, but now they've revived a bit against Betis, who now can't overtake Villarreal in the standings. I read there was a difference between about 6-7 million euros for who ends up fifth, the sixth, etc. So, that's a bit of a blow for Betis, who I guess we're still hoping of chasing down Villarreal. But Getafe now have another crucial game. Every single game now is crucial for those teams down there, and it's going to be interesting to see if Bordalas can keep up with this kind of results and then provide his experience to the team, because we know he's a very, very good manager. He knows this competition super well. He knows Getafe extremely well and probably is the right man to save them. So we'll see if he finally can get the job done. He's there, 38 points, just above Valladolid and Cádiz, but anything can happen. So as I said, it's going to be super entertaining to see what happens with all these teams involved.
Yeah, we'll come on to Villarreal at the end, in the second half of the show there. But Betis, like you say, they can't overtake Villarreal. I think they probably need about 3 points to secure 6 spots from Athletic. They've got the head-to-head over them. I think with Betis, this is not quite a summary of their season. I think that's too simplistic. But certainly there's been an attitude that when they've needed it, they've not quite either been able to have that goal within them to kind of break down the opposition against those kind of sturdier teams towards the bottom, battling it out, or just to keep those clean sheets. I think at both ends, they've been just a little bit lacking in this kind of Champions League race, which they were very much in until about 2 months ago, or a month ago, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, they were one of the favourites, to grab one of those Champions League spots. I thought this season they would take their game a level up. They had made some good signings, the team looked strong, Pellegrini had just come from a very good season with the club, but it didn't really pan out that way for me. As you said, mistakes at both ends. I feel like the strikers haven't really performed to the expected level. Borja Iglesias, who we all love, hasn't really been up to standard. He's been missing some important opportunities. He hasn't even been a reliable starter. Many games Pellegrini hasn't even played Borja Iglesias because he hasn't been up to par, and the same goes with Julian Jose, who I guess in his case he was more of a second backup striker, but he hasn't been great either. Juanmi did have that really good start, but then after the injury and everything, he lost a bit of punch in attack, so unfortunately Betis in that end weren't too good. And at the back, 15 sending offs this season. I asked Matt the other day and he said the record was 17, I think, by Zaragoza, so just 2 sending offs away. That's a lot. I remember watching games and then suddenly Bezzella gets sent off, Edgar gets sent off, always one of the center backs or someone else, and with that it's really difficult, I guess, to keep playing in a consistent level, and especially also if you lose your main or your best player, we could say, aside from Canales, Fekir, who hasn't been lucky this season, lots of injuries, and in the end a bigger one that's left him out for what's left. So unfortunately, it hasn't been easy for Betis. But I mean, I think they can be happy with that sixth spot, take into account all the ups and downs they have been through this season.
Yeah, and the fact that they've not really been able to invest too much in recent years as well. We spoke about that short squad at the start of the season, and I think very much combined with kind of the frustration of those red cards, we've seen the fatigue and the inability to kind of get over the line in some of those games really kind of catch up with them a little bit, and they will very much be valuing this summer where they can go off and rest and sit in the sun for a little bit, I think. Just one final game I want to touch on before the break. We had Celta drawing 1-1 with Girona at home. I mean, they took the lead through a deflected Carles Perez effort, and then Girona kind of came storming back in the second half. Tristan Stuani got the penalty after Sigankov won it from Javier Galan. This was a pretty good game. It was pretty back and forth. Both teams could have won this in the closing dying moments. I think almost last kick of the game, Girona had a curling effort tipped over the bar. But Celta, they're not quite out of it, are they? I mean, they're on 40 points with Valencia. They're 2 points clear of Valladolid. But coming up, they have an away trip to Cadiz. And they have, on the final day of the season, they're at home to Barcelona, who no great shakes against Valladolid. But you don't really want to go into that game needing a result, do you?
No, absolutely. I mean, Celta, honestly, have been surprised, I think, towards this end of the season. Because with Carvajal, it seemed like they'd fixed most of their problems. They were playing good football. They're getting goals. Gabri Veiga was shining. It felt like, you know, they wouldn't really have to worry about relegation at all. And out of nowhere, they've just started to drop points. And this 1-1 result against Girona, sorry, isn't great. Obviously, it breaks that losing streak they had. But still, 2 points away. If Cádiz, Getafe, Valladolid, these guys get some good results and Celta lose, I mean, they are really going to have to suffer till the very end. So it's quite surprising to see them dropping down like that, whereas Girona, on the other hand, you know, they're just fighting for a prize, which would be the Conference League, because I think nobody expected them to be there. I honestly thought they would be probably fighting for relegation this season, as it usually has been happening for them when they've been in the first division, but they have really surprised us this second leg, we could say, of the second part of the season, and they've been playing fantastically well. So I mean, 1 point for them at Celta Vigo is a great result. They'll try and get 3 more points the next match, but so far so good for them.
Yeah, it's not an easy run-in for Girona in the sense that they've got Osasuna and Real Betis at home, but if they could take 6 points from that, they're very much in with a shot of that seventh spot in that Europa Conference League place. I've seen Oriol Romeu and Michel Sanchez both linked with Barcelona. The former more for a kind of tying over option for Busquets, but Michel Sanchez won there. Potentially keeping tabs on. I think I tweeted out about a month ago, in my dreams, I think Michel would be considered for Barcelona. And maybe that dream will come true at some point down the line. But yeah, Celta, damaging point again. They do kind of need a result, at least, I think, at once. We will leave that for another day. We'll jump into the second half of the show just shortly. We'll come on to kind of the European race. We've got Cadiz as well to touch on at the bottom, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. We promised you more about the European race, and it is looking as if it's more or less settled, it has to be said, but Real Sociedad will not be counting their chickens, given that they've thrown away a few results. Mind you, Villarreal behind them have done so too. Villarreal, I'll start with them because it was the Battle of the Yale Submarines, and quite a lot going on in this game. Villarreal won it 2-0, Nico Jackson scored, and they finish it off with a goal from Manu Trigueros. But yeah, Nico Jackson has been on fire in the recent months, and 20, 25 million was the kind of rumoured fee that he was supposed to be going to Bournemouth for, and I'd suggest that if he does leave this season, or this summer, sorry, it'll be quite a lot more than that, won't it, Roman?
Yeah, knowing how well Villarreal tend to negotiate for their players, I think they could definitely get some more millions from Nico Jackson, and honestly, the question is whether they will want to sell him now, because he is playing really, really well. He's scoring goals every single game, or assisting at least. I mean, that's something you really value in a striker, you know, and that's something that Villarreal have been missing most part of the season when they were looking for a complement for Gerard Moreno. We did see that Nico at the beginning, when he got his shot with Emery, looked like a very talented player, but then he lost a bit of, you know, that touch, I guess. He faded out from Emery's plans a bit. He wasn't looking as a reliable player. Then he got injured. Then it seemed like he was going to leave. Then he had to stay, obviously, because he wasn't fully recovered from his injury by the time the winter transfer market came along. And now, you know, Quique Setién, I guess, didn't have many more options. Relied on Nico Jackson, and he's been responding in the best way possible, with goals, with assists, and with points. Because, I mean, in the end, all those goals he's getting are allowing Villarreal to keep fighting for that fourth spot for the Champions League. Unfortunately, it seems like it's a bit too late. Villarreal dropped some relevant points along the way, which I think have led them to the situation. Always keep remembering that defeat against Elche, for example. That would have been another 3 points that would have kept them very close to Real Sociedad. But it is what it is. At least they're still fighting. They've guaranteed that fifth spot, which is, of course, good money for them. And now they have to keep on pushing these last two games to see if they get very, very, very lucky, although I see it's quite complicated that Real Sociedad let go of that Champions League spot.
Yeah, La Real need just 2 points to do so. And Ivan Alejo, the Cadiz winger, who's been in trouble earlier this season as well, was caught biting Isamandi. Weirdly enough, he kind of gets up, Isamandi is shouting in his face, he's celebrating, I think it's a goal kick, and Mandy jumps up, kind of not quite sinks his teeth into his shoulder, but gets there, and then it's as if he kind of realises where he is. Escaped punishment, luckily enough for him, but Mandy didn't make too much of it, and Alejo kind of withdrew his teeth from Mandy at the time in a bizarre incident. Perhaps I'm being too frivolous with it, but no harm, no foul, I guess. And yeah, Villarreal, Nico Jackson, like you were saying, I think if there's one positive that Villarreal can take from this, if Nico Jackson does stay, there is a world where Gerard Moreno is fit next season, Nico Jackson is there, and they could quite comfortably make that fourth place, I think, if that happens and if that is the case. But coming on to Real Sociedad, they beat Almeria 1-0 at home. Takefusa Kubo with an absolutely stunning effort curls it right into the corner, and La Real, it's in touching distance now. They just need one big result, don't they?
Yeah, it's almost done for them. As I said, I feel like they guaranteed it few match days ago. It was true that Real did go through that bad streak, we could say, they had a few months ago, but then they managed to recover. So in that sense, really well done from Garitano, because it is a young squad in the end. They could start feeling the pressure, you know, seeing that the results weren't coming, seeing that all the good work they'd been doing previously was kind of fading away. But in the end, he's managed to redirect their ship, and now they're on good track. You know, they're getting the results. Maybe they're not playing their best version of their football, but still, Real Sociedad, they're a very efficient side, and when they need, they can win by a goal or two, or they can actually score three or four. So I mean, we could say, adaptable side, and I think they really deserved that fourth spot, honestly, because they have been really, really good overall this season, and I think the best prize possible is the Champions League.
Yeah, and we speak about how different a side Moreno makes Villarreal, but certainly if Real Sociedad can get Sadiq in scoring next season, then that will transform their side as well. And as much as Aguacil likes to praise Rolot, and he did, and there's rumours that they might try and keep him next season, and I like him in many respects, but he's not the lethal clinical striker that that many teams in the top four do.
I think I said Garitano, right? I always say Garitano instead of Alguacil. I don't know why. I have it in my mind, it's they're the same guy or something, but I tend to say Garitano when it's Real Sociedad.
And to be fair, there are a lot of Basque managers achieving pretty highly. In Almeria, 3 points dropped. I mean, well, not dropped, but 3 points that they didn't get. They remain a point above those kind of trio of teams. We know that they rely on their home record. They've got Elche on the last day away from home, which, yeah, they're awful away from home. But if they can pick up the 3 points there, they should probably be okay. Just looking at that kind of those kind of four of teams. So you've got the three teams on 38 points, Valladolid, Cadiz, Getafe, and Almeria on 39. Do you have favourites to go down, or is it just in the order it is Valladolid to go down for you?
I mean, it feels like every match day this changes for me. You know, I've been seeing so many teams when I've been asked lately, and I'm probably getting it wrong, but then I might be getting it right at some point, you know? So, I mean, definitely, of course, Elche and Espanyol, we know that, well, Elche, we know that it's down. Espanyol looks very likely. That would be my second candidate, of course. And then I guess, I was thinking Almeria, but it's true that they're a strong home team. They have a point more, but I just kind of feel like they might be the weaker side over a lot of those four closer teams to the relegation zone.
Interesting. So they do have Valladolid at home next, so that will be, not quite a shootout in the same way that the Getafe game will be, but very much close to it. You mentioned Elche there, who are obviously down. They did secure a 1-1 draw against Sevilla. Pape Gay got sent off for the third time. Mendilibar was not too pleased with him for doing so. Eric Lamela had opened the scoring, and then Tete Morente kind of looped a header. I don't know if it was him or Jesus Navas, but somebody knocked it in over Dimitrovic, and some more pride for Elche and Sevilla. Slightly frustrating result, because if they had won here, then they would have been, I think, level on points with Athletic going into their game.
Athletic lost to Osasuna 2-0 away from home at El Sadar, which was rocking to see Ante Budimir head home, and then a later goal from Lucas Toro, which moves them level with Athletic on points, but ahead of them and into seventh spot. And Mallorca beat Valencia 1-0 at home, and that leaves Valencia very much still in the mire with Espanyol to come on Sunday.
Real Madrid beat Rayo Vallecano in a more or less a non-event, I think it's fair to say. I mean, Raúl de Tomás scored against his former side. Benzema did get his goal as well. He managed to down the keeper and score. Rodrigo got the winner very late on. I don't know if you have any kind of thoughts on that before we move on to more of the Vinicius fallout.
I mean, there's still a little fight up there between Atletico and Real Madrid to grab that second spot. I don't think it makes much of a difference. I think Atletico probably want it more than Real Madrid at this point. But yeah, now Madrid haven't got a Champions League game to worry about or anything like that. So, I mean, it was not a very important game, we can say, overall, because Rayo also had really complicated aspirations of making it to any European position. So, yeah, interesting in a way.
The way that they played those final 10 minutes against Espanyol would have suggested that they aren't too bothered either, because certainly they had one or two chances to really go for it and did not. Moving on to the to the grim stuff of the week again. More Vinicius fallout. La Liga have kind of asked for more sanctions. Javier Tebas has apologised. Vinicius has since had his ban lifted by the RFEF for that red card. There's also been a 5-game partial stadium ban for Valencia. They've been fined 45,000 euros, and the Mario Kempes stand will remain closed for the next 5 games. Ruben Baraja, the Valencia manager, has been pretty against that. He came out with a statement against that, as have Valencia. They say that they will appeal it. There's been a lot of reaction in Spain against the Vinicius suspension being lifted as well. Florentino Perez has come out and said stuff about it too, and asked for reform in the refereeing room, which I'll come on to that in a little bit. But your general take on kind of these events and how it's kind of played out in the international media as much as the Spanish media, Roman?
Well, it's a very spiky topic. I don't like to talk too much about it because, I mean, a lot of people can naturally get offended. There's a lot of interpretations, a lot of views. And when it comes to sharing different ideas, sometimes one doesn't really make sense to the other person, and they react in an maybe excessive way. So I kind of feel like here in Spain, the awareness of racism is very different to the one we have in other countries in Europe, for example, the UK, except France or whatever, you know. And I think there's a lot of ignorance here in Spain, and they don't really understand what is racism at some point. And with this, I don't mean to excuse anybody, because of course, when you're being a racist, you are being a racist. But sometimes it's important to understand where we're coming from. And even in my case, I'm somebody who I think knows a lot about this kind of thing, and I'm in contact with people from all over the globe, etc. And even I have sometimes struggled to understand why one person considers a certain thing offensive and the other one doesn't, you know. So it's a complex debate, even though people after hearing this might say, what are you talking about? They're being racist, you know, there's no questions here, and I agree with you. But in Spain, things move slowly, and as you have seen, people don't understand why international media have reacted in such a strong way. And in a way, this has been good, because it's made La Liga, the federation, react, and they've imposed these sanctions probably because there's been a massive outbreak outside of Spain. Because I mean, there have been plenty of cases regarding racism, and sanctions have been pretty light mostly, you know, or there haven't been any in many situations. So at least now we know that they are going to do something. Hopefully they enforce this a lot more. They have to make much stricter rules, because I mean, in the end, I actually wrote an article today in La Liga Lowdown about going to the stadiums, and it's not really a great thing to do with family, with friends, because it turns into a very hostile atmosphere, you know. And it's not just the racism, there's homophobia, there's insulting, there's people throwing objects, there's people spitting, there's fights, there's people invading the pitch, and this is just happening too often. I think it's always happened, but now at least we're talking about it, you know, and it's important to point these things out. So, I mean, they have to, you know, install all these different rules and be very strict when things happen, so we can avoid more of these situations, which obviously we can't stop it 100%, but at least we could intimidate people to be a bit more respectful, to know that if they're going to go to the stadium and do a stupid thing, they're never going to go back, and it's not worth taking the risk now. So in the end, this will benefit everything and make it more healthier for fans and for people to enjoy football games, because there are stadiums where we see fantastic matches. I like to put the women's football as a good example, where the atmosphere is so much more festive, so much more, we could say, family-wise. I remember going to the game in the Champions League between Barça and Real Madrid, which broke the first record, the Camp Nou, and everyone was just so happy there singing, even though it was Real Madrid, you know, they had in front, but that wasn't really a problem. Everyone was really happy, was celebrating. It was a joy to be in that game, family, kids, everything. And that's the kind of atmosphere I want, and I think most people want at the stadium. So hopefully we can lead football towards that, because it's horrible to have to talk about racism and all these kind of things so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's really good take and really good kind of summary from you there, Roman. And certainly, yeah, that disconnect between kind of this Spanish kind of view of it, and we're going in massive generalizations because obviously there's a world of opinions within Spain and without Spain, but yeah, certainly the thing that's been picked up on from my point of view is the fact that, like, there's been maybe too much energy devoted to kind of debates that aren't the racism. I think a lot of people, when they see kind of the discussions going on in Spain, don't understand why perhaps, well, yeah, there's the provocations thing, which we know Vinicius, regardless of what he does, regardless if he spends the entire game telling Valencia that they're going to Segunda, doesn't matter when it comes to condemning racism. We know that not the entirety of Mestalla is racist. I think anyone with a brain cell can tell that. And I think in terms of kind of the way that it's been handled, is it's been too defensive from Valencia. So if, for instance, in their statement, they condemn the racism, they say we've done all this to help out, and then they say, but the majority of our fans were well behaved and so on. And I think that has riled people the wrong way, because they don't understand why they can't just condemn the racism and they have to defend people. There's been a lot of energy dedicated to debating whether Spain's a racist country or not, and a lot of people coming out and say, well, Spain's not racist, blah, 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 so on, so on, so on. And I think for me, and the thing that jars most is the way that, yeah, people have been focusing on things that aren't necessarily condemning the racism, sorting out the problem and working out what should be done to combat that. And yeah, I understand people are angry about the Vinicius red card being rescinded. I think that's totally justified. He should have received at least a one game, if not a two game ban. Hugo Duro, if you're going to do anything, should have received retrospective action rather than rescind Vinicius's action. And even Real Madrid, because it's another thing I wanted to say about this, is that there's racism in every country, in every institution, in every club, wherever you go, or at least discrimination. You can always find instances of this. It's not limited to Spain, it's not limited to any particular club. And even Real Madrid, I think, have handled this poorly in a sense, because Florentino Perez came out and said, we can't permit this, we have zero tolerance for it, this is terrible. And then he goes on to talk about VAR and say, this is proof that we need reform in the refereeing structure. And that is just totally beyond the pale, nothing to do with it. And I thought that was wild that he did so. And yeah, I think it shows that there's certainly room for growth on all sides, from all teams, from all clubs. And it's a tricky topic to debate, and admittedly we are two white guys discussing it, so there's a perspective from that as well that we're probably not the best people to be talking about it, but we can't exactly just gloss over it either. But yeah, perhaps we will delve further into it after the season's done, and the good thing is that action is being taken, even if it's not necessarily happened at the right time. If it's happened too late and it's come as a result of that international pressure, at least it is coming. And hopefully the important thing here is that La Liga do not just kind of glaze over it when it next happens. The important thing is that these sanctions happen again, that this action is swift again, and that the same treatment kind of gets doled out. Racism is eradicated from stadiums, essentially. But I don't know if you have any final thoughts on that. Sorry, I've spent a long time talking there.
I had my turn. I mean, I said all I came to mind that moment. And it's definitely, as you said, a very, very complicated topic. And hopefully we can eradicate racism. Obviously, that's going to be almost impossible. There's always going to be one or two people that, you know, do their own thing. But it's important that this topic at least is talked about and people react to it, because we need changes. And the only way we get changes is if people complain and, you know, they're talking about it. So in a way, Vinicius has done a good job in the sense of coming out and complaining often to La Liga, to everybody, and getting the president of Brazil, getting a lot of footballers to speak up, because this in the end is the only way with the influence. That's how you manage to make important changes.
Absolutely, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Just looking ahead very briefly to the weekend, Sevilla take on Real Madrid on Saturday night. That game has been moved so that Sevilla can prepare for the Europa League final a bit better. Valencia Espanyol, as we mentioned, huge game. Cádiz Celta Vigo, massive game at the bottom as well. Girona Betis has European implications. Getafe face Osasuna at home. Barcelona will have their chance to say goodbye to Alba and Busquets at Camp Nou on Sunday evening as well. All of these games are kicking off at 7 Spanish time, by the way. Atleti Real Sociedad, Almeria Valladolid again, massive game. And Rayo Vallecano are hosting Villarreal, finally. On that note, thank you very much for your company, Roman. It has been a pleasure, as ever.
Thank you once again, Matt. Rory.
We're getting to the end of the season. We're getting to the end of the season. It's nice to be confused with Matt, who is, in my opinion, the best host of this podcast. But yes, I will say adios, adeo, and we will speak again on Monday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.